Welcome to the Advancing Women Podcast, where ambitious women come together to challenge the status quo, advance their careers, and up-level their lives. The Advancing Women Podcast is hosted by gender equity expert and executive coach, Dr. Kimberly D. Simone.
Welcome, warriors, to the Advancing Women Podcast. So recently, I received an award, some recognition, and as a woman, I'm still nervous a little bit to talk about this because we are socially conditioned as women to not brag, and I'm trying to get over that. So I'm going to talk about it, and I'm going to talk a little bit about why we thought it would be fun to have it as an episode of the podcast. So Business First had its 17th annual award recognizing the leadership, business acumen, and community spirit of 25 women. And the categories were things like creativity, entrepreneurship, innovation, and inspiration, which was the category I was recognized for. So I received the Woman of Influence Inspiration Award. And that honors women leaders who, through their words, actions, and attitudes, inspire those who work with and around them. So I'm going to talk a little bit about how that ended up being something we wanted to talk about in this podcast. And I'll tell you a little bit about the award. There were 25 winners total in various categories. And after notification that you were being honored, they asked us to be photographed and interviewed for the article that appeared both online and in the upcoming printed issue. Some of the questions they asked were things like, what's your proudest accomplishment? What leadership positions have you held? Those types of things. But the question I'm focusing on for this episode of the Advancing Women podcast was the question about career advice and what career advice you would give. This was the part that my very dear friend and colleague, who has been on the show before, bringing her expertise as a creative warrior, Heather Harris, said, you know, that would be really fun to talk about on the podcast. So why don't we do it? And I hemmed and hawed a little bit, and then we started talking about it anyway. And I thought, all right, let's go ahead and talk about this on the podcast, because there really was a lot of great advice that women offered up, and it really got us thinking and talking. And that's really important, because even if you don't agree with everything, if it gets you thinking, that's really important. So Heather, welcome. I'm so glad you could be here. I'm glad you suggested that we do this episode.
Thank you, Kimberly. I'm glad to do it too, because you and I both have had enough advice given to us, especially career advice over the years, that when I was reading the printed article that came out, some of the advice I thought was fantastic, and others of the advice with a little bit of a few years under my belt, I felt lukewarm about.
Yeah, it's fair. You know, we talk a lot on the podcast about what advice works for women. This was advice from women, but it was advice women were giving to anyone. But part of what I do on this show is talk about the best practice advice we so often hear and see and how it's interpreted in ways that best serve us. How do we take what's good in what we're hearing and how do we funnel it through what we need to have it be valuable, right? To have it work for us.
Yes. And can I say, I also come at this from an educator's perspective because I have a lot of young people, both men and women in the graduate program. And I do know that they hear a lot of advice. And then sometimes I think they feel duped by the advice. And so I think this is an opportunity for us to think about if there's a young person who's reading the article or is listening to this podcast to maybe think long and hard about the advice that they're given to say, does this really work for me? Does this really fit?
I think that's fair because sometimes there can be unintended consequences if we take everything at face value, even in well-meaning feedback. And so we looked at this and there were many responses that were similar. If there's a few that are similar, we'll kind of group them together and talk about them together. It just seems to make more sense. Let's jump into the first one here.
Okay.
Don't be afraid to ask for feedback on how you're doing. So again, here, that's very sound and logical advice, right? We should want to get better. We should want to improve. We should want feedback. But you do have your kind of spidey senses going off a little bit here, I think.
I do. I've never had to ask for feedback. It's always just given to me.
And what is the intention of the feedback? And can we always trust the feedback? I think that's important. So yes, ask for feedback, hear how you're doing, but I'm going to add, don't always assume that the feedback is true, that the feedback is accurate and is grounded with the intention of helping you be better, because a lot of the research shows that sometimes the feedback we get is really grounded in gender bias or perceptions and stereotypes. And so you were saying, Heather, you've gotten feedback and sometimes you're like, even if I don't ask for it, I get feedback. And mm-hmm. you know, is it valuable?
It's not always constructive, Kimberly. I mean, as educators, we're trained in giving constructive feedback, right? Feedback that helps students move to the next level in their education and in their learning. But I think in the workplace, many times you can get feedback that is not constructive, that can land harsh. It can just discourage. I'm not saying it's always discouraging, but sometimes it can be discouraging.
Well, I think you're right about interpretation too. So we know, for example, as educators, we're both professors, that the research shows that feedback given to female professors looks different than male professors. Certain words are used that are not used for men that are for women. Mm-hmm. There's also that similar research in the corporate environment mm-hmm. where the interpretation can be filtered through what we expect women to be like, how women should be versus how men should be, and what behavior mm-hmm. are appropriate. And are you being nurturing enough? And are you being kind enough? And are you putting others first? And so when we behave in a certain way, it can be interpreted as a flaw on your part when really you're not doing anything that different than perhaps a male counterpart is doing. It's received differently.
Exactly.
So yeah, I think, you know, when the feedback comes in, you have to really ask yourself if it's true and really think about, is this something that I need to fix? Or is this a person perceiving something I'm doing as problematic just because it doesn't align with their perceptions? And we've talked about this. If a student comes to me and says, hey, can I get an extension? I need to turn this in late. Research shows that as a female professor, if I say no, they're like, wow, taken aback almost, but they almost expected their male professor to say no. So mm-hmm. they're not as taken aback. And so then we get the reviews that say that we're not being empathetic and we're not nice or whatever the words are. And it's mm-hmm. like, okay, is that true? Or is this about you had expectations for me that I did not meet that were maybe grounded in gender bias and not actual That's feedback that I can do something with?
So. I couldn't have said it better. That's exactly. Yeah. I like the idea of asking for feedback. I do. But I think for women, when we ask for feedback, then we also have to expect it might not be the constructive feedback we're looking for. And so to your point, we need to filter it.
So the next one, I got to tell you, Heather, when mm-hmm. I saw this one, I was like, wow, that is Heather Harris advice if I've ever heard it before. Don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. And I've heard you say something similar yourself.
Yes, I like to say progress, not perfection. Yes.
Yeah, I love that.
Progress, and this not is perfection. Very good feedback. I do like this because I think perfection is not really attainable. I don't think any of us are perfect. I think we can all shoot for it. But when we are thinking about perfection all the time, all of the progress that we're making in whatever it is that we're doing goes unnoticed. Goes unrewarded or uncelebrated. And if we're thinking about progress, hey, look how far I've come, then there's always reason to celebrate versus this perfection or this ideal. Well, we're probably never going to hit perfection. So
I agree. I would also say that it can be stifling and sometimes lead to inaction. And that is a concern, right? I don't want to be afraid or to not act because it's not ready. It's not ready. And I know I felt that even with starting the podcast, sometimes yeah. we don't start things. And at the same time, we live in the social media world, right? For women and moms, you know, is my face perfect? Is my child's photo of them at every month of their life perfect? Is everything perfect? So I think there's even more reinforcement. I think this advice is especially true in mm-hmm. our social media world. It is so easy to see perfection, to see someone's best day mm-hmm. and compare it to your worst day.
Oh, another one that I heard recently is don't compare somebody else's outsides to your insides. Which is similar, right?
I love that so much because what we see on the outside isn't always what is
what's happening on the inside for that person or for you.
Yeah, it's all the things, right? It's all the things we hear, like, don't let someone else's highlight reel be compared to your everyday. So this is a constant reminder. And I think more than ever, as we're in a social media world, just really great advice. Don't let the perfect be the enemy of the good. This next one, this is kind of one of those common sense things that everyone will say, of course, but it is a good reminder. Especially in a world that sometimes feels very transactional and what have you done for me lately and how can I get what I need from you and how do you serve me? This person said, take advantage of the opportunity to build relationships and then build meaningful and genuine ones. Mm. Again, in our social media world, probably more important than ever to be thinking about the relationships we're nurturing and that we're building.
Mm-hmm. This makes me think of something else that you've talked about too, Kimberly. I mean, the workplace is a bunch of people in relationship with each other. And I would say over my career, it has eroded from being a community to being this transactional place, right? This place where we're just here to transact.
Yeah, this reminds us that it's important to build genuine, meaningful relationships. And I know for me, I'm in my 50s. I look at my career and I've worked hard. I've done all the things, but almost every opportunity that has come my way has been a function of, yes, I've worked hard. Yes, I'm prepared for the opportunity, but I have had a relationship with a person who has had my name in their mouth when I wasn't in the room, who has thought of me for an opportunity, who has believed in me and had my back and vouched for me in some way. And I think as women, especially, that is part of our story.
Mm-hmm. And I think building relationships is a superpower for women. Like, we do this naturally. This is what we're made of. So this is great advice for us to work in our strength.
Yeah, I totally agree. It is our superpower. We are the ones who manage the relationships. A lot of times we're expected to be the social lubricant in a situation to smooth it over and make it better. And sometimes it's not fair that we have to do it, but it does make us really good at it. Mm-hmm. I would argue behind every successful person are relationships that helped them get there. Yes, there's talent. Yes, there's hard work. Yes, there's some luck. There's a lot of things. But if you want to make good luck, build relationships and build meaningful and genuine ones. I think that's excellent advice. And I take it to heart for sure. So now we're coming up on one. I got to be honest, well-meaning advice that a little bit concerns us. I think Heather is probably even feels a little bit more strongly about some of it, but there were a few comments. I'm going to read all of the comments, this advice, and then we're going to talk about what we like about it and what we're concerned about. So if it's not fun to go to work most days, you need to do something else. Find a job you love. Don't settle for something that you don't look forward to every day. Pick a field you love. Show up every day and do your best. If you love what you do, it will always be fun. So these are multiple. This is like four or five people who gave these comments. And I am not the Grinch here. I am not here to say don't have fun at work. But I do think there's a nuance to this. So let me just actually first start with Heather. What kind of prickles you in this? Because you were kind of prickly about some of these.
I was. well, I know that these were good intentioned statements. I think it sets up an expectation that is unrealistic. I've had many jobs. I think I have loved aspects of every one of the jobs I have worked, and I have also hated aspects of every one of the jobs that I worked. And yet this says, I'm supposed to love it. It's supposed to be fun. It's supposed to feel like play, that if I love it, I'm going to want to show up every day. Even jobs that I've loved, I haven't wanted to show up every day. So I feel overall, it just sets up an unrealistic expectation. Yeah. And there are a lot of young women who are looking to older women like yourself and myself who have gone ahead of them, you know, for some good advice. My daughter is one of those women. And I have to tell her, frankly, there are going to be some things that you're going to love about your job. And then there's just going to be some stuff you're not. And you're going to have to do it anyways, because that is work that has to get done in order for you to do the joyful parts of your job.
Yeah, I think you raise a point that I didn't actually think of at first, which is, you know, we've got these students and they're getting into jobs and they're hearing this kind of almost toxically positive, you must love it. And then they go into it and they aren't necessarily feeling, especially in the beginning, right? It's hard. Yeah. You're not an expert yet. You feel like you're making a lot of mistakes. You haven't found your footing. You're not sure if you fit in. All these things are happening. And you've got this barrage of it's got to be fun. And I do think we're seeing more and more people quitting faster. I agree with you. We have to be careful. Everything has a season. And oftentimes the beginning of a job is not that season. It's the opposite of the honeymoon. You don't get that honeymoon right away. You get kind of a tough go.
It's like doing crunches versus some of those exercises that you love that are fun, right? Crunches aren't fun, but they're really good for you. And they build all these great muscles. Jobs are like that too. There's parts that aren't fun.
I think the opposite is very true. I think if going to work most days is terrible and never feels fun and you hate it, then I think you've got a problem. You're never going to thrive in a place that you hate more days than not, right? So I think there's something to be said for don't spend your time in work that you absolutely hate, that almost every day feels miserable, mostly because you're probably not going to be very successful in it. How good could you be at something that you constantly hate doing? So I think the opposite is true. I looked at this from a woman's advice lens, and I thought, I feel like for the history of men and women in the workforce, that there's been a subtle nuance that like men need to work and men's work is important and significant and women's work is nice. And so therefore women do work you're passionate about and that you feel good about and that makes you happy and joyful. Oh, you have a hobby? You should make that your job. And to me can feel like you're discounting, like we're women, men, we work for purpose. We work to create things that are important, that are bigger than ourselves. And sometimes we as a culture are like, you need to always be happy and it needs to always be fun. And the secret to life is happiness, when the secret to life is having purpose and being able to look back and say, I overcame adversity. So perhaps the day that you had the least fun was the day that later you look back to and said, wow, I love how I handled that. And I overcame, I transcended, and I thrived despite that. And if we're constantly looking for the fun, and I don't think that that's what all of these women are implying. I think they're right. Like, don't hate your job and you're going to do better if you like your job. But I do think we need to be mindful that work is not just about doing something you love. And it's okay if it feels like work. It can give you purpose and money and accolades and opportunities and a lot of things besides fun and joy. There's a lot of purpose and value and you're good at it and you're contributing in a meaningful way. Maybe that doesn't describe fun for a lot of people, but it does describe work that's worth doing, in my opinion.
Right. And can I say, you and I have talked enough, you know, this is something that irritates me. And many times I hear men say this. They'll say something like, oh, I just fell into this job that I love so much. And it's like play. I'm not working. It's play for me. And it's so annoying to me because number one, there's two separate words, work and play. Those two words evolved because those two things are different. Work is functional. Work gives us purpose. Work accomplishes a goal. Play is joyful. I'm not saying work can't be joyful, but when I think about playing, I don't think about doing Excel spreadsheets.
You said it perfectly. They're not the same. We just need to be careful, I think, especially with women, that we're not encouraging women to do fun, joyful things that they're good at that are their hobbies instead of doing the challenging work that is purposeful that is still very rewarding, right? I'd like to see more find work that is rewarding, contribute and bring value to, and that makes you feel like you have purpose.
Yes. That's said better.
Important than every day should feel mostly like fun.
And so, I think that's what these ladies meant. But they didn't say it. So we just have to be.
So we're going to just, it's my podcast and I'm going to say it a little different. So I actually have another grouping here. And this is the, what I'll call the give 100%, suck it up, buttercup kind of commentary. But I have the perfect one that's a segue and it says, find a job you love and give it 110%. So we've already talked about what you love, but we've got the give it 110%. Never ask anyone to do anything you would not be willing to do yourself. In anything you do, work hard, give 100% effort. don't sweat the small stuff, always keep smiling. So there's a lot going on here, but it's all around this idea of giving 100%. And please understand, anyone listening, I'm not saying phone it in, don't work hard. Of course, we should work hard and try and give it as much as we can. I just think sometimes maybe you're giving it your all is not 100%. And maybe you're a mom and you're working and you're trying to help your family and you've got parents that need you. And there are days you're allowed to bring 80% because that's the best you can bring. And in a world where women have so many expectations outside of work, I can't always give my family 100% and my students 100% and my job 100%. Sometimes I can't do those things, right? So it's again, one of those grain of salt kind of things. Do your best, but give yourself a little grace and understand that sometimes you can't give 100%. And that doesn't mean that you're not still awesome, excellent, doing a great job and bringing value.
I agree. I think for me too, this goes back to the earlier quote, which we really liked about perfection, right? Not seeking perfection. I mean, isn't 100%, isn't that what we call perfect?
Yeah.
As teachers, we grade assignments, right? And a perfect assignment where nothing could be done any better ever in the history of all of the assignments I've ever seen.
Right, actually, this is
perfect. This is 100%.
Don't make mistakes. If I'm giving 100% and I make a mistake, what is the consequence of feeling like you're always giving 100%, but then everything doesn't always go as well? And there's some grace. I know I use that word a lot, but there are days where I'm like, you did your best. And given everything you got on your plate, that's pretty damn good.
And I would say too, this 100% and this feels like a perfection mindset isn't really answering the question of, did you get the job done? Right? Because really what you're supposed to do is show up every day and get the job done, whatever percent of you it takes to get the job done. Give it 110% every day. That's suggesting that you can never get it done unless you give 110%. And so again, it feels too high in the sky when you say it this way, which I understand the sentiment of what they're saying, to work hard and to give it your best, for sure. But when we say give 110%, especially for women who already give 110% in just about every area of our life.
Yeah, I think that that's
a little discouraging to hear it like said like this.
I think so too. And I think one of the things I was thinking of was there does tend to be this narrative that women hear, which is, I had to work twice as hard for less money, but I did it and I overcame. And it becomes almost this badge of honor of, I work harder than everyone and the grind. And that almost excuses that sometimes we have to work harder. And it's okay to say, well, sometimes I see people not giving 100% and they still get ahead, but it seems like I have to always give 100%. And that reminds me of the work of Williams and Dempsey on the prove it again bias, which is that women have to prove it again and again and again. So I actually have sympathy for all women who feel, yep, I got to show up. I got to give 110%, whatever. And that is what I have to do every time, because the minute I don't, they'll say she's not good enough. And the second they say she's not good enough, they'll be saying women aren't good enough, right?
Yes.
So we're taking all of that.
Yes.
That's a good point. It's a lot. I really think it's a lot.
So I
do sometimes cut ourselves a break and say, you know what, babe, if all you've got is 75% today, then you did your best and you need to pat yourself on the back for bringing what you had with everything else you've got going on.
Yeah.
With
the greatest. And did we get the job done?
Right.
Did we get the job done?
As we get older, I don't feel like I should have to give 100% to do things because I've spent 30 years working to be able to do it by giving 70%. And that doesn't mean I'm dogging it. It means I'm now that good.
You're
right.
Efficient.
So like,
yes.
So I need to just, you get better at things, right? You don't have to work as hard. And that's something we're supposed to be allowed to do as we get older. We're supposed to have more experience and more wisdom so that we can do things a little bit faster, a little bit easier than it was when we were younger and we were learning.
Yeah. Can I also, one little piece of advice that was given that we haven't touched on is, don't sweat the small stuff and always keep smiling.
I was going to bring that up.
The always keep smiling portion. Nothing wrong with smiling. I think it's great to have a great attitude, But again, if I think about you, Kimberly, and I think about gender equity, I have never heard a man tell another man to smile. And right. yet women are told to smile all the time. So why do we have to smile?
And I would say what we hear more and more is stop telling women that they have to smile. Mm-hmm. And this, I think, is prickly because women always smiling has smackings of, I think, for many of us, the likability mm-hmm. dilemma. Mm-hmm. That we have to be liked or competent, right? So you can be tough, but make sure you do it with a smile because you don't want to hurt anyone's feelings and you don't want to make anyone feel bad and you don't want to come across as too tough and not feminine mm-hmm. enough. So deliver your message, but do it with a smile. And so I don't think that's, again, what anyone was getting at, but I think it's something we need to be mindful of, right? Yes. Mm-hmm. It's also exhausting. If you look at the research on emotional labor, a lot mm-hmm. of it was grounded originally in the work of some people have jobs where they have to smile all the time. And it was found in the service industry, in the hospitality industry. It was actually the work of Dr. Arlie Hochschild, who said, these people in this industry are very exhausted from having to do that all the time. And women who have an unfair share of the labor at home then come into work and have to constantly prove it again and overcome all the biases there and work sometimes twice as hard to prove ourselves. And then we've got to smile and not make anybody frustrated and look happy and pleasant all the time. It can just be too much sometimes. It can just feel like a lot. So yeah, point well taken. All right, let's jump into some of these ones that we liked. We'll zip through uh-huh. them. Listen when others speak and notice when they don't.
That's a good one.
That's great advice for men and women, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I think we have to start. I'm an extra extrovert, and I know that I often talk. And that doesn't mean I'm the only one with good ideas or that I even have the best idea. And I do try to practice this. And this is good for me to hear and remember, but I think for a lot of people to remember is who is possibly not speaking and why. Who has a seat at the table, but maybe not a voice at the table?
Yeah. Yeah. That's an excellent one. I like that one.
Yeah. Okay. This next one, right? Don't think you're the smartest person in the room. I do like that, even though sometimes we are the smartest person in the room, but I think it is what it is, right? Sometimes we are. But I love what this means in terms of your community and the community you nourish and the people you surround yourself with. I love the idea of who challenges you in your group, who around you gives it to you straight mm-hmm. and you can trust it. Have you surrounded yourself with people who elevate you? Yes. I take it kind of from that perspective.
I think that's a good way to take it because I, quite frankly, took it a different way. Yeah. I have not worked with a single woman who has acted like they are the smartest person in the room. I have worked with many men, but I have never worked with a single woman. Now, I know this advice was just being given to all people, but this is not an Achilles heel for women that we think we're the smartest person in the room.
There is no denying the research that shows that when we look at things like confidence, mm-hmm. We tend to revere confidence in men, but see it as conceit in women. Mm-hmm. We tend to see men who are assertive as a positive thing, and women, we see it as aggressive. So there is this kind of double standard. And I do think from that perspective that women rarely need to be told, don't act like you're the smartest person in the room, because we've been socially conditioned since birth to make sure that we never make people, especially men, feel like we think that. Exactly. And we're supposed to be humble and we're supposed to put other first and we're not even supposed to be thinking about all that. So fair enough, Heather. Amen, sister. I totally agree. Next one, pick your battles. Not all are worth your time and energy. And I like this one right after the conversation about emotional labor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree with this one completely. There are so many things that we could be fighting for on a daily basis in our careers. And knowing where to put your time and energy, I think, is a skill you develop over time. It is something that we can coach each other on. And that's what's so nice about having people who you can go to and ask, hey, this is happening at work. I really feel this way, should I say something? Should I do something? Because some battles are worth fighting and then others, not so much. It's not worth spending the time and energy.
I agree. And again, it's exhausting. I'm a working mother. I have a lot of passion. If I go to the mat every time for everything, it's a gift to yourself, right? This isn't about saying give up or don't stand up for what you think is right. Do those things. This is saying cut yourself a break and you don't have to always solve everything. And it's okay to let some things go. And I find that advice very necessary. Sometimes I'm like, I don't need to have a strong opinion on this. I don't need to fix this. I don't need to be involved in this.
Yeah. I think also for younger listeners, I remember when I was younger, at certain times I thought, well, this is my job. I thought this is what you hired me for, to fight these battles. And while that's true, I think the idea of not all of them are worth your time and energy is a good thing to learn as well, that you have to choose those battles wisely.
Something you've said before that I love, you talk about the stages of life and you have this really clever thing you say, you learn, you earn, you discern. Yes. So early in your career, you're still learning, right?
Yeah.
You get to a place where you're like, I've proven it. I'm going to capitalize, make as much money as I can. And you go through those years where you're building your career, you're building your salary. And then you get to a point, and I think we talked about this in our 50s, where you discern. And I love discernment because discernment is part of choosing your battles.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Right? You are at a place as you get older sometimes where you say, you know, I've been down that path before. Sometimes when you argue with an idiot, it's hard to know who the idiot is. All those kinds of things. And I'm just going to let myself out of this one and just recognize that I'm not going to go down that path. I'm discerning that this is not something I need to go to the mat for. So I love that. Listen first. That was a very distinct piece of advice that I thought was really good and maybe something that's great for men and women to hear. It's really biblical, right? Seek to understand rather than to be understood. Grounded in that.
And very good.
I just don't think we can go wrong with that. I think that's one of those, you know, no notes. Listen first. Good advice to hear and to digest and to be thinking of and to be reminded of. Same with this next one, right? This one is kind of common sense, but worth saying. Always treat everyone with respect. You never know when your paths will come across again. Another person said, kindness matters, treat others with respect, success will follow. So that type of advice about being respectful and treating others with kindness and how that will eventually lead to success is really common sense, but yet in some ways, I think counterintuitive to what we hear from the world sometimes. And so I do think it's important and notable.
Yeah, I would agree with this one. You catch more flies with honey than vinegar.
I also think we do run the risk sometimes in a business environment or in any environment where we need others to get things done, to start seeing other people as means to the end of what you need. I know society says, surround yourself with people who can help you get what you need done. And this is about treat people with respect because you never know where that can take you and that kindness. And maybe you don't get anything back, but you're just a better person and a better leader having done it. So sound advice, certainly. Now, this is our last group, I think, and it was about overcoming fear, being brave. And I'll read a few of them. Ask yourself, what would I do if I wasn't afraid? And then do it. Another one said, don't be afraid of trying something different. Step outside your comfort zone. You don't reach the end of life and get to hit the reset button. Never look back and wish you would have. Go for it. And I think these are great advice, of course, for everyone. But I think we need to think about why it is that this can sometimes be really difficult for us as women.
Fear of failure.
Yeah.
Fear of failure. Yeah. And it's a real thing, and especially for us women.
It is. And I have an episode that I did on this, and I'll include it in the show notes. I hear a lot, women need to be more brave. They need to take more risks. And I would say women are brave. The reason that often we're afraid to fail is grounded in a lot of research that shows that when women make mistakes, those mistakes are noticed more often, are given a higher level of critique, and are remembered longer and can have bigger consequences, right? So in a world where I'm not allowed to make as many mistakes, or if I do make a mistake, maybe everything I've worked for so far, I'm going to be seen differently, or you're never going to forget the mistake and I'm never going to live it down. Maybe it's a little bit harder for us to say, I'm going to go ahead and take the risk. So yes, we should take more risks. Certainly, we don't want to look back at our life and say, I never tried. But I really strongly feel this is an area that women deserve and need a little bit of grace.
I agree.
And empathy and compassion to understand why it is so damn hard to take a risk when you're so afraid that any mistake you make is going to be remembered and have all these consequences, because often they do disproportionately have those kinds of consequences. So let's not be afraid, but let's understand and give ourselves grace as to why maybe we're a little bit afraid.
Sometimes too, women are smarter in being less risk-taking.
So
I know there's research that shows that men take a disproportionate amount of risks, and those risks don't always work out. And I think women are really observant. And we watch and we see some stupid risks being taken, and we've learned from that.
Yeah.
We don't take those risks.
I know it's two different things here, right? So there's risk and then don't be afraid, but they are connected.
They are.
Yes, men are more likely to take risks, but they're more likely when they fail within those risks to be looked at as, well, that's kind of part of it. Men become entrepreneurs, the business fails. Well, we expect that. A woman becomes an entrepreneur, she fails. Well, she didn't have it in her to make it happen. Mm-hmm. So that's all going on there. And yet you do want to say, what would I do if I wasn't afraid? That's a great question. Doing things that you're afraid of and stepping outside your comfort zone, I think we just need to acknowledge it's a little bit more difficult for women. And so if we acknowledge that, then maybe we can approach it with more empathy, compassion, and a more realistic view of what's happening. That it's not that you're not enough or that you're not brave, because women are brave. It's the very real experiences we've had when we've failed, and trying to say, how can I reframe this so it's actually not even really seen as a failure? And I don't see it as a failure. So it is good advice, and especially important for us women to be thinking about. We have just a couple more.
Yep.
Take the time to know who you are and what you really want. Know your values and get a coach. I loved this because so often executives and people at the highest levels get coaches. And we think of it a lot of times as something that's a weakness, or why do you need that? But you are an athlete yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You what a coach can do for a talented person, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. As women, sometimes we need to recognize that we are worth that investment.
Mm-hmm. I also like, take the time to know who you are, because especially for young women entering the workforce, and I remember being this young woman entering the workforce, I wasn't exactly sure who I was as an employee or as a contributor to society. I wasn't exactly sure what my contribution was. You don't know that, right? So you need to take the time to figure out, like, where do I fit in? Where do I add value within an organization, within society, within my community or my family? And then really get to know your values. Well, those evolve over time, which is exactly why a coach is perfect to help you figure out what those values are. Because at first, maybe you're in that learning mode of your career where what you're really valuing is getting experiences and maybe being given some projects where you can stretch your legs a little bit and learn. You need to learn by doing. And then as you are growing in your career, maybe now you're in these earning years, right, where you are very proficient, and now you're seeking the big promotions and the opportunities to advance yourself professionally, leaps and bounds. And then later in life, now maybe you're leading organizations and you really need that discernment, right? And a coach is the perfect kind of person, or a community of coaches or a community of people that have your back. It's perfect for helping you to figure all of that out, because they're in one
book. Yeah, I'm going to say, navigating as a woman, whether it's in the workplace or any kind of leadership role or any kind of place where you are asserting your talent or you're taking a risk or you're bringing an expertise or anything where you're really elevating your game as a woman, there are going to be unique barriers that you need to transcend mm-hmm. and navigate, because the workforce was not designed by or for women. And there are invisible rules. And if people don't believe that, they're probably not listening to the podcast. I think anyone listening after 100 episodes plus knows that this is true. So most of you listeners are going to go, yep, that's true. And so when you have to navigate that, you can be brave and bold and awesome and badass and a warrior mm-hmm. and have people who've got your back in a community, whether it's a coach, a great friend, people who will give it to you straight, mm-hmm. who you can turn to and help you when you're not sure, who will get you back to your core values and say, no, that's not true. Or, you know, that is something you should consider when you're getting all that feedback that we talked about earlier. Mm-hmm. We don't hear it enough. Find people. If yes. you don't have them in your circle, get a coach. Invest in yourself. You're mm-hmm. worth the investment. You are worth being coached. See, coaching is different than professional development. Women are told to take professional development courses mm-hmm. and workshops, and it's almost always grounded in not enoughness. Change this. You're broken. Fix it. Coaching mm-hmm. is about saying everything you have is within. Mm-hmm. You are incredibly talented and capable. Let's tap into what we need to tap into to get you where you need to be and where you're very capable of getting. And that is one of the reasons why I'm so pro-coaching. Coaching yes. is grounded in you're not broken and everything you have is within, and it helps elevate you and get you there. And I'm a big fan of that.
I agree.
So here's my favorite one. I saved it for last. And it's very, very clever the way mm-hmm. it was phrased, but also it hits all the boxes for me. Positions are like shoes. Well, you had to know I was going to love that because I got kind of a shoe problem, but positions are like shoes. They fit us each differently, and you never know what they feel like until you walk in them. And now here comes the advice. So instead of I could do better, think, what might I do differently? And I was love like, it. That's it. What can I do better? How did I get it wrong? How was it not good enough? All of that. There's nothing wrong with saying, how could I do better? But it's not the same as what might I do differently?
Yeah. Even just that language, what might I do differently, is empowering language. I can do better is judgment language, almost yeah. shame language, right? Like Brené Brown would say, almost like
you said judgment language. You know, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with saying I could do better, but it does have a judgment of mm-hmm. not enoughness. It doesn't mm-hmm. offer the grace of, well, at the time you did the best you could. Do differently says, okay, at that time and in that moment, that's what I did. Let me suspend judgment. That's your words. Suspend mm-hmm. judgment. Yeah. Now I'm just going to look at what am I do differently, which is growth mindset, right? This is, mm-hmm. I'm always trying to be better, of course, as a human being. Be better is not the same as do better. Do better is don't make mistakes. Be better is I'm constantly trying to grow. But what might I do differently is such a wonderful opportunity, such a great outlook to say there's mm-hmm. always another chance to grow, to learn. You know,
can I interrupt you to say, I like what might I do differently, because it wraps back around to earlier when we were talking about fear of mistakes. And, you know, as an artist, I like to say, what is a mistake but an unintended outcome, right? Like, oh, I didn't intend it to do that. And that's what it did. And someone else might call that a mistake. No, that's not a mistake. It just came out differently than I expected. So what might I do differently says, this came out this way, but what if I try something else? I can make it come out differently. I can have a different result, a different outcome.
I love that. And
both
it also
are just as good.
It looks at the periphery too, right? Like maybe that mistake showed me something that I never would have anticipated. I think I'm going to include one of the episodes you were in where you talked about that. You talked so much about maybe a mistake is just an unexpected outcome, and maybe it's more than what it could have been. And I think that possibility of what might I do differently is why this piece of advice really hit home for me, and why it was my favorite, and it was the one that I chose to end with.
Yes, I do love this one, and I do love shoes. I particularly love boots. Boots are my favorite.
Yes, you're a boot kind of girl.
But my favorite piece of advice that was given by these women of influence, if I may share, is this one. Never water yourself down to make others comfortable. That was my favorite advice, because I think that rings so true, especially after spending years in corporate America and years in academia and feeling like I've needed to do that, and then realizing, nope, I'm not going to water myself down to make others comfortable.
Yeah. So of course, that's my piece of advice. And because Heather's always got my back, she's picking that one, but I will critique it a little bit the same way I have the other things and say, never water yourself down to make others comfortable is a luxury of a 50 something woman. It's what my 50 year old self wishes my 20 year old self knew. And yes, that is to say that it is really hard to take up space when you're young in a society for women that is always telling you to take up less space and to be less. My heart is broken for all of the young women who constantly hear take up less space and yet you're not enough. Too much, not enough. Too much, not enough. That is so hard to constantly navigate. I don't want to take away how challenging that is.
And how are they hearing that they're not enough? You've said it so many times, because we're asked to go develop ourselves in areas that we're actually not deficient in, right? You're not courageous enough. You're not taking enough risks. Well, the reasons we're not taking risks is because when a mistake is made, we're penalized harder for it, right? It's all these biases. It's this not enoughness is constantly coming through.
Well, right, because there's the fix the women. It's the fix the women, fix the problem versus fix the systems and the structures and all that. And I think that that's true. So if we look at the not enoughness that we hear all the time, you know, you stay at home with your kids, you're not doing enough to advance women, right? Now, companies are going to be afraid because women work and then they stay home. Okay, well, then I'll work full time. Well, then you're a crappy mom. Okay, well, I'll do both. Well, you're not good at either. You don't have your priorities straight. All the things we're constantly hearing that
you're not giving 110%.
That's right. On Tuesday, I have it right here that you did not give 110%, right? But this is the whole thing. And that's the not enoughness. But then you're told you're taking up too much space. Speak up in a meeting, don't interrupt. Even though the research shows that men interrupt women more, we still think, oh, women are interrupting, because any interruption from a woman is seen so egregiously. And so we do have this too much, not enough, too much, not enough. For me, never water yourself down to make others comfortable is, if I can't make you happy anyway, and if it's damned if you do, do if you don't, then I might as well just be authentic, because
I love it.
Or change or do, it's either not going to be enough or it's going to be too much. And I think that is what I wish for listeners. That is my manifest statement, my final takeaway. Never water yourself down to make others comfortable, because the dirty little secret is it's not going to work anyway. If you water yourself down, you're not going to be enough. And if you come full octane, you're going to be too much. So if I have to choose between those two evils, I guess I'll just be authentic, be myself, and not water myself down to make others more comfortable.
Perfect ending. I love that.
Yeah, so that's it. So Heather, this was actually very fun. I wasn't sure how this was going to go. I wasn't sure about it. But you know, since I'm always talking on the podcast about the advice women get, this was a great way to just look at some advice, some of it familiar, some of it new, and think, well, what would that look like if we really chatted about a little? It helps, I hope, for those listening to think about the ways that we might take the advice that serves us, question the advice that doesn't, and sift any advice we hear through the lens of, does this help me? Does this benefit me? Help me grow in some way, versus does it tear me down or make me feel not enough? Because that should never be what we get out of the advice we get. And I'm so, so grateful for you to have pushed me to do this episode, that we finally got it done. And I'm so happy you were here with me today to talk about it.
Thank you for having me. I enjoyed it.
I'm sure we will have you on again soon. Thank you. Mm-hmm. For more resources, you can visit my website, www.advancingwomenpodcast.com, and connect on Instagram at Advancing Women Podcast. I love getting your feedback, so please email me at drdsimone@advancingwomenpodcast.com. I just want to thank Joe Jacobs, the audio warrior who wrote the music for this podcast, and a huge thanks to Heather Harris, the creative warrior who designed the Advancing Woman podcast logo. And thanks to all of you for joining me here today.